How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
This is Whitney, also known as Teeth Talk Girl, from your favorite YouTube channel, Teeth Talk. And right now you're listening to the unofficial Dental Hygiene Podcast.
These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome to this week, 115, Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Michelle.
And this is Andrew.
What's up, Andrew?
Not a lot. I'll talk about my quick little week, and then you can talk about a lot of your stuff. So a lot of stuff happened for you. I did one of those classic Andrew, almost 70-hour work weeks.
Dumb.
So that was really fun and enjoyable. And did I tell you that I got a little citation thing here?
What, a parking ticket?
No.
Speeding?
Exceeding speed limit, state highway, 21 plus miles per hour.
Oopsie daisy.
So the story was I was working about 4.5 hours away from home, and there's a lot of hills. Wasn't paying attention. I may or may not have been talking on my phone also.
Not with me.
And the not with you. The Oregon State Police decided just to give me a warning. So
that is such crap. I tell you, I have never gotten out of a speeding ticket. Ever. In fact, I swear they do it because, like, maybe I've gotten reduced from a super speeder to just a speeder. Sure. But that's it. I've never gotten a warning, and ugh, it's such crap.
Yeah. No, he was really cool. It was just, and there's a couple of things. One, he was, he actually had a sense of humor, and I was just kind of messing around with him, and he said something about, he's like, oh, well, you know, Vancouver, that's, you know, at least 4 more hours. I'm like, what are you doing to me? Like, why are you rubbing that in? I know I have 4 hour drive ahead of me. This totally sucks. And I had a 10 hour shift behind me. So he was just really cool about all of it. And I think he just felt a little bit bad for me that I had to drive for so far, but yeah. So thank you, Oregon State Police. Finally, I will think differently about you as a whole now because of this experience. Because I hated them for the longest time.
How often do you get speeding tickets?
some.
You're on the road a lot, though.
Well, and you think I'd learn my lesson?
Well, I just feel like your stats are going to be a little higher than someone else that's not traveling 4.5 hours for one shift.
Yeah. My last, like, speeding ticket was 2 years ago, and it didn't go on my record because you can pay, like, a fine and say, hey, I promise I'll do it for a year, and then so that was gone. And then before that, it had been several years, but there was a rash of, like, 4 or 5 within probably 5 years.
Oh, that's not bad. I already had 2 in the last year, so.
Oh, but you're on the road a lot too.
Well,
doesn't make it acceptable, though, listeners. We're sorry. We're going to learn our lesson.
I'm not. I'm going through Stark County, Florida again to go to Gainesville. And I know I'm going to get a speeding ticket there because that's what I do. Ugh, it's a speed trap town. I hate that town. Anywho, I did have a really busy week. I just flew back from Chicago because I was at RDH Evolution. And you may have heard our little bonus episode that I did with Emily Bogie talking about it. This was their first annual. And it's really just about the evolution of your career and what you want. What do you want out of it and how to get it, how to obtain it, really connecting you with people who could help facilitate that for you or at least help you even pick a path. You know, like some people just don't know what they want to do, but they know they want to do more. So that was, it was really great. It was coached by Christine Hodson Berry, because we've had her on the podcast before. It's Christine Hodson, but she is now Christine Berry, and she is an executive coach, and she's done coaching and mentoring and things like that. And so she facilitated this where she had these activities and workbooks and things like that. And then there was four or five of us that gave presentations about kind of what our role is outside of, you know, the traditional dental hygiene role. I talked about a tale of two hygienists, of course. It was just a really wonderful, empowering, I've only had a glass of wine. I've had a long weekend though. It's very empowering though. And it was, I guess if I could highlight some of the things that we were doing there and then highlight what I kind of took back from it. It was a smaller group of people, so very intimate. And by small, I mean like maybe 30 to 40 people, not hundreds. And it was intimate enough that we could have these small little groups, these little breakout sessions, but it really forced you to think about your goals and what you wanted and not just like, okay, for instance, her example was, I'm going to lose weight. Okay, well, that's a great goal, but how? What are your steps? Like, do you need to go buy shoes? Do you need to go buy workout clothes? Do you, and then put a timeline on that. And then do you need to get an accountability partner? Who could that be? Put a timeline on that. Like, it's like, here are the, like, so list them out, focus, get very concise with what you want, pick that one goal, and then let's break it down even farther. So it was really, it helped. I mean, I made a list of things that I needed to be doing, and it really kind of kickstarted my or reignited my passion to do those things because, again, you get kind of caught up in everyday life and it gets put on the back burner. I learned a lot about a lot of good books. We had a lot of people making really great suggestions on books. I'm going to download the app Eat That Frog, which is a way to set a goal and a time frame, and you can't, like, you can make a list of goals, but you can only have one active goal, and you need to, like, complete that goal or that task or whatever, and then you can eat that frog. I guess I don't know where it gets the name, but there's also a book out there, Eat That Frog, that was from the great Amy Kinnaman. She suggested that, and for me it was a real reflection. So my presentation was on entrepreneurial and consulting, and me and Emily Bogie were presenting on that. And, you know, one of the things that I didn't really realize until I was forced to realize it by making this presentation, and then luckily I gave my presentation on day two, so I got to hear some really great people go ahead of me who were talking about their path and their journey and, you know, how they got there and how they could help facilitate others to do that as well. And the one thing that I realized that I've done all these things, but I've never felt like I accomplished anything. Like, I don't feel like a successful person or like we've done anything like grand and wonderful. I just do what I do and I like what I do, right? Like, that's it. Except the one thing that, really kind of connects all the dots as for the reason that I've chosen paths is because I got pissed off. And I know this comes as a shock to you.
Yeah, big shocker.
But it's like I went into dental hygiene because my on-the-job trained, I was an on-the-job trained assistant. That dude pissed me off. I, you know, got my bachelor's degree because the dentist told me it was stupid to ever progress your career in dental hygiene. Like, why would I waste my time? Go be a dentist. I got pissed off that, you know, like nobody had a dental hygiene podcast and I wanted to learn more. Like, you know, like there's just things that I'm just like, well, that annoys me. Therefore, I'm going to do something about it. And I was like, none of that seems like a positive thing. So to me, I don't liken it to success. But it was a great reflection and really helped me to even understand some of the things that motivate me to get things going.
Do you, so after coming away from this meeting, though, do you feel like, oh, actually, I really have accomplished some things now in my life because so-and-so kind of pointed things out to me, like, I am a success. I am doing very well. Do you feel better about that?
Yeah, but you know what I loved so, so very much? So Jackie Sanders was there. She is with Sunstar, and she has been a mentor for many years to many people. She's a true kind-hearted person. And she said, just because we're probably on the same path, I'm just farther ahead on that path. Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we kind of all expounded on that and said, you know, and honestly, my path and your path might be very different. And we're actually at the same exact spot. We're just on different paths. Or she's been on a path a lot longer than me. Her obstacles are very different than the obstacles that I'm dealing with now. And so it's very hard to compare yourselves to each other, because we're all so different and we all started out very differently. Yeah. And again, we're on these very different, like we're on the same path, but it's just like a farther along. It doesn't make you any better or any smarter, even any like more accomplished. But yeah, I do. I mean, this weekend was a real eye opener as far as the podcast and what it's done and taught people. We had some listeners out there and it was so fun to meet them and hear that they were learning things from the people that we were bringing on. There were people that were getting involved in new things that were interested, like myofunctional therapy. And I was like, oh, you should listen to Joy Moeller, Trisha O'Hare, Cindy Johnson, and Julie Worrell. Like, listen to these. And they're like, oh, I didn't know those were there. And I was like, God, that's so cool that I could actually go back and say, hey, there's these resources for you. And from those resources, there's even more resources. So that made me feel happy and like we have accomplished something. It did. And Trisha O'Hare was there, who is always like, of course you have accomplished something. You guys are great. And I'm like, well, but you're the most amazing person in the world. And so of course you're going to tell us that. But so it was good. It was really wonderful.
That sounds fun and uplifting.
It was very uplifting. Yeah. Very uplifting. I got to hang out with some of our really wonderful friends like Nicole Schreiber and Trisha O'Hare and Christine and Amy Kinneman and Amber Auger,
and Bogey like was
Emily
there,
Bogey. Right. I was like, God, I could go on and on and on with all of the wonderful people. I did host a podcast without you, Andrew.
Nice. That's fine.
Michelle Galloway from Penwell she's probably number one in the running for future co-host if you do get out of line.
Fun.
It was, I can't wait for everyone to hear it. It was hilarious. And she was a little nervous. She was joking, like, I'm just going to like stutter or something. And she said some of the funniest things that I was crying when she said them. Oh, so it's going to be great. You're going to love it. So yeah.
Can't wait. That'd be great.
Yeah. It was a good weekend. So this week I'm heading to Townie. Actually, I think this podcast will come out when I'm at Townie meeting, but maybe I'll post so that everybody knows that, come find me at the Townie meeting in Orlando. That'll be my first time going to that meeting. And probably the first time you haven't been to that meeting in a while.
Yeah. I've only been a couple times before, but it was, you know, it's a good meeting. It's very, you know, close knit people. If you have a lot of friends there, you know, then it's just like kind of what you just experienced. People are just very positive and uplifting, having fun, seeing your friends that you've been talking to for years on the internet, you know, so it's kind of a dorky kind of meeting too. So I kind of enjoy that one a lot, but yeah, you'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think so. And today's interview is with one of the kindest little soul, Joanne Gurenlian, on the podcast, and she is truly a legacy, like truly. And even though I did say one of the things that I've learned about the podcast is how to ask and not to be afraid to ask and approach people, because what I've discovered is that some of these people that I've been reading their articles, seeing them on online and in these like online webinars and like just following my entire career are the sweetest, kindest people and the most uplifting. And you're going to encounter that more often than you are someone that's not so kind and uplifting. So to go ahead and do it.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's sometimes hard to, you know, that one little detractor versus the dozens and dozens of people that are propping you up. But Joanne does a really good job, I think, especially in this episode, of really helping us like find our worth, kind of piggybacking on what you had done this last weekend. One thing I really liked what she said in this episode, she said to be a thinking person. And I think that that's kind of her mantra, because if you think of all the amazing things that she's accomplished in her lifetime, it's all about, you know, being proactive, being a thinker, and then getting that information out to everyone else. So I think you guys are really going to really enjoy this episode with Joanne Grinlian.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
Hi, welcome to the interview part of this here podcast.
This year podcast.
We are still in Chicago.
I'm having to share a headphone set with Andrew.
We're trying to figure out how that works.
We really don't like to be this close. Like,
yeah. If you guys can see our picture, you should probably screenshot this picture too. We're really close. We will put a picture of us being ridiculously close on. Oh, she just probably closed out a GoToMeeting. Anyways, so we have an amazing guest today. We've been trying to get her on, but we keep failing at doing that. Mostly Michelle's fault. Because she's working all the time.
Yeah.
And that's the excuse we're going with. But we have a dear friend, Joanne Grinlian, is here with us. We first met her in...
Yay.
Yeah, we should have an applause button.
We like should. On a radio.
Yeah.
We'll have to look up sound effects that we can do after edit after the fact.
That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
But we first met in Montana.
Mm-hmm. At the American Eagle, like a summit that we were at. And it was a true honor to finally meet you. You know, it's like one of those things where I've been reading your stuff for years and years as you've a novice hygienist, a little baby hygienist. And so it was great to be with you. And, you know, when you meet people that you've known for a while and they actually end up being cool people.
Yes.
Like it just makes it that much more amazing.
It was very awesome. Like, yeah. So thanks for being so awesome, Joanne.
Yes.
Well, thanks for saying that. And thanks for having me here, because I'm really excited to be with you guys. And I was so honored to meet you and to have a chance to visit with you for a couple of days in Montana and to learn about what you do for the profession of dental hygiene and how great it is that you showcase so many of our colleagues who are working in our profession and supporting oral health. So you made me feel really special. That was great for me to have a chance to have time with you. And I never get a chance to visit with my colleagues when I'm traveling around the world. I'm always doing something and stuck in a room and doing meetings and things, and I never get that chance to really get to know people. I thought this was a very special time.
Oh, good.
Yeah. You want to maybe let's go over sort for some of our like brand new baby hygienists.
Yes,
kind of your background. Like, what are you? You're involved with so many things, but let's start from somewhat the beginning.
Okay, so we'll go like back in time and really bore everyone. So I have been a hygienist for 40 years, which sounds, you know, amazing and probably remarkable to some people who are just starting out and thinking, I will never do this that long. But I really thought that this was going to be my career for my life, because I loved everything I was doing when I was in dental hygiene school. And I thought this was the most interesting thing to be doing. And I felt that way my entire life. So if you're starting out in dental hygiene and thinking, well, I'll do this for a few years and then look for something else, rethink that plan, because this has been something that has offered me so many different avenues I never thought possible. So I started out, like many people, as a clinical hygienist, and I am still a clinical hygienist.
Wow.
So ever look at this and say, I'm only going to do this for a few years and that there's nothing I can learn after 3 years in dental hygiene. There's every patient brings you something new and interesting. And if you have that philosophy and look at it that way and say, what can I learn from this person? You're going to learn the rest of your life. Everybody teaches you something. But I looked at dental hygiene and said, what else can I do? And I knew right away I wanted to teach. So that was also a part of my plan, was to become a dental hygiene educator. And my educators inspired me. And I have to say, I had one teacher who really set me on this path because she was something very special too. And you know how you have rules in dental hygiene school and you have to follow the rules? And you know, you have to start with an instrument and it only goes for like 6 teeth, and you, God forbid, you put that instrument in another part of the mouth, like
yes.
The rule falls apart. And I can vividly remember looking at, you know, I was working with a Gracie 13-14, and I had this calculus on the lingual of an anterior tooth, and I'm thinking, I can't get it. That, you know, Columbia 13-14 isn't working, and that Gracie 1-2 isn't working, and I'm looking at that calculus and thinking, I'm going to lose points, and this just isn't working for me. And but that Gracie 13-14 looks like it'll fit, you know, and I'm trying to think, can I sneak it over there? Or,
where's my teacher? Like looking behind you?
Yes, I am. And I'm thinking, I'm going to get caught. I know I'm going to get caught because, you know, I'm that kind of person who always gets caught. And I'm just about ready to do it. And my instructor comes and she puts her hand on my shoulder. And I'm like, I knew I was going to get caught. So I figured, all right, I'm going to have to tell her. Like, I was just ready to use the wrong instrument in the wrong spot. But she was so great because I said, I really feel like this will work for me. And she said, well, then why don't you try it? And I'm thinking, oh, really? And she pulls up her stool and she says, well, let's see what would happen if you did it. And I'm thinking, she's like, this is a great teachable moment for any student. And she allowed it to happen. And she showed me how the angle of the curette might or might not work. But it did work. And I'm thinking, well, now I'm going to fail because I used the wrong instrument in the wrong spot. But she didn't fail me. She didn't take off those 20 points. And she talked to me about shapes of curettes and angles and all that stuff. And she was great about showing me possibilities. And she always did that. You know, while other instructors were so rigid about, God forbid, you know, you didn't follow every blessed rule, she opened up that world. And that's what made me think about, if I were teaching, wouldn't I want to be that person? Wouldn't I want to open those doors for other students and show them that you have to think? You have to be a thinking person. You cannot be an automaton. And I was like, oh, wow, I want to be that person. And I actually was in a hygiene school that had a dental school associated with it. And we would do rotations in the dental clinics. And there was a periodontist who did the very same thing. He would take students and he'd say, before you put that scalpel in an area and you cut, think about what it is that you want to do. Visualize what you're trying to accomplish and think about, you know, this, and then talk to your patients about what you're trying to accomplish and have them be on board with you. Like the patient is a part of the process. Oh, this is a revelation, you know? And it was just really these eye-opening moments for me that made me think about, well, if I was a teacher, wouldn't I want to be like that? And so those were some influential moments for me about, well, if I was teaching, wouldn't I want to be open about being a teacher? Or did I really want to be a textbook person? Or did I want to be a thoughtful person when I taught? And wouldn't I want my students to be treated like human beings? So there were a lot of things that entered my philosophy of teaching, and I have loved teaching. I've always thought teaching was like a highlight of what I did. And I work now with graduate students at Idaho State University. And again, it's very different teaching graduate students from undergraduate students. So I feel very privileged to work with them because they aren't trying to become a healthcare provider. They are healthcare providers. Yeah. So I want them to think on a completely different level. I don't want them thinking about where they are now. I want them to think about where they will be 10 years from now and how they will influence not just dental hygiene, but healthcare in general and society and look at the world differently. They already are there. So we don't have to get there. But where are you going to be and how will you change the profession? It's a very different mindset. So anyway, I love that part of what I do.
I think sometimes with the hygiene program, you know, as an instructor, you have to be pretty dogmatic in the beginning because, I mean, gingivectomies can happen very easily. But as they are getting closer to that graduating semester, it would just make sense for that critical thinking to be cultivated and not so like you said, just you can't use that instrument in that area. Right now I'm teaching students advanced or fulcruming. And the fact that they want, I'm like, yeah, put your hands on the outside of the mouth. And they're like, who else is going to see this? Are you allowing me to do this? Or are other instructors allowing me to do this? Like, if I go do this tomorrow and you're not here, am I going to get in trouble for this? And so I think it's, you know, as instructors and as students, I hope everybody understands, like, there's a reason for the dogma in the beginning. And but critical thinking is just, it's critical in our profession and with patients. And I don't know if all programs and all instructors help cultivate that in a way that they should.
Well, one of the things that we did when I was chairperson at Thomas Jefferson University, so this is going back again a few years, but we as a faculty decided that we did not want our students to leave our program without critical thinking and decision-making skills. And so we sort of blew up our program and reinvented it. And what we did in the last semester of their program was had them become practitioners. And they were responsible for creating their plan for the patient and implementing it. And we no longer ticked every box. There were no process evaluations. They did their full assessment. They created a diagnosis and a treatment plan, and they came to us and said, this is what I'm going to do. This is why I'm going to do it. And this is how I'm going to measure my success. And so we practice as though they were independent practitioners. And then we came and evaluated it and said, were you successful or not? Why not? What happened? What influenced the process? And you had the patient back and you reevaluated the patient to see if the outcomes were successful after so many weeks. It was really a game changer for us in so many ways. We stopped counting calculus. That was a huge change for everybody because you know how you're so dependent on that, you know. We stopped looking at all the little things and we started looking at the big things because we thought, you know, these students are leaving us in what, 3.5 months?
Yeah. It's scary. Graduate.
Yeah. And they're going to be responsible for themselves. And we thought that if we didn't get them ready for practice and the real world, what were we doing exactly? And they had to start making decisions on their own and be responsible for that. Well, I can tell you that we went through an accreditation having done that. And what did we get called on of everything that you can imagine? Counting calculus.
I was going to say calculus detection.
We didn't count calculus. So they made us go back and create a form for counting calculus, which we, of course, hurried up and created a form to count calculus, and then we threw it away. they laughed because we thought that was the most ridiculous thing we had heard of. I mean, we did it for 3 semesters, you know, according so that the students learn proper techniques and all these things. Right. In that last semester, we felt it was more important that they be critical thinkers and decision makers, and that's what we were evaluating them on because we knew we weren't going to be standing over their shoulder in a few months. And they had to be able to make decisions on their own. So we really loved it. I mean, we thought this was different.
It's also calculus doesn't removing calculus doesn't make a hygienist.
Right.
Like, that's just, and that's sadly what our boards and sometimes the accreditation, like, that's what we are based upon. But how often are we evaluating if the patient learned anything from us? How did we teach them? You know, were we able to develop adherence or compliance with home care? Did we put a toothbrush in their mouth? And do we actually know how to teach them to brush their own teeth? Like, you know, the things that actually matter for the long term oral health.
To get health, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, the non-surgical skill, the technique, the not causing trauma is very important. But I mean, that shouldn't be the entire education of a hygiene program.
Well, and you think too about who do you want to work alongside? Do you want someone who's going to be able to, you know, critically think, or do you want someone that's going to be able to scrape calculus enough that they pass the boards of minimal competency, but maybe not really all that good because that's all they're focusing on.
Yeah.
And also, when you look at big picture stuff, right, the things like calculus removal becomes not such a big deal. I mean, it's still a big deal, but like you can focus on so many other things that that's not your like consuming life.
Well, yeah. look at the latest literature in periodontics that shows that more people benefit from oral hygiene instruction than anything else. The most successful outcome for patients is oral hygiene instruction. When you partner periodontal, non-surgical periodontal therapy and oral hygiene instruction, it's oral hygiene instruction that wins. So we need to spend a huge portion of our time making sure our patients understand what we're teaching them in terms of oral hygiene instruction, and then that they can perform the skill of toothbrushing and interproximal biofilm management than anything else. So we think we're doing a great job yammering away at our patients while we are instrumenting, which is not oral hygiene instruction. And we need to separate that out and make sure that our patients really do understand what we're doing. And Colgate did some great focus groups, which I thought were just absolutely hilarious. They're not funny, but they are funny. where they asked patients, you know, they had their hygiene appointments, and then they asked patients, what did you learn and what can you do? And the patients said they didn't learn. They didn't know, because when we're working on patients using our instruments and we're saying, oh, Andrew, you really need to get those back molars and brush them better and make sure you're taking your toothbrush and doing this or that or whatever they're saying, the patient has completely tuned them out because they don't really like instrumentation. And so they're blocking out what you're saying when you're talking while you're instrumenting. So we think we're doing this fabulous job of educating our patients, and we're not, because patient is just not listening. And then when we do give our instruction, we're giving so many messages. Like, let me tell you the 10 things you need to know to improve your oral health.
Say them back to us also at the end, you know, of the test.
It's 10 things too many. So we're not doing a great job with our oral hygiene instruction, and we really could be better at what we think we are doing. So that's an area we need to improve on. You know, you cannot teach your patient smoking cessation and diabetes management and, you know, oral health care and biofilm removal and all these things all in one appointment. And we really need to think about what we're doing a little bit better as we do it. We may be labeling ourselves preventive specialists, but are we really as skilled as we like to think we are? Maybe we need to rethink our appointments and what we're trying to schedule and do and take control of those appointments a little bit better. But we can't always accomplish those things when we're not taught to be really highly skilled in those. If all we're worried about is getting little spicules of dead tissue off of teeth.
I wanted to ask you, since you're practicing and also educating and all of that, what are your thoughts about entry level being bachelor's versus associates versus kind of all the differences there?
So I definitely think we need 4 years of education as a minimum to be the highly skilled healthcare provider that we can be. And I do think at a minimum, it should be at a baccalaureate degree. But let me blow your minds and tell you that. I think we're done with that. I don't think we should be obtaining baccalaureate degrees to be licensed dental hygienists. I think we've long passed that. And I think we fought for that since the 1980s to make that happen. So I think if we can't accomplish that, let's see, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010, 2020, just about. So 50 years of working on that process and going nowhere, I think we should just forget it and just not even try for that. I think we should make hygiene clinical practice at the doctoral level. I think entry practice should be on par with other healthcare providers like physicians, dentists, nurses, physical therapists, all at the doctoral level. I think we should be on par with that because what we are doing is providing care to individuals who often are largely significantly medically complex. We are often injecting chemicals into their bodies and these medically complex patients that could contribute to a significant, perhaps, response. And oftentimes we are working with patients who could have some type of medical emergency. And I think if we're doing that, we should recognize that we should be on the same level as other healthcare providers. But in addition to that, we should recognize that the work that we do is highly skilled and we are trying to provide these individuals with something where we are preventing significant disease and treating significant disease and working on a level that requires research and other levels of attention to address disease, and we are wanting to prevent disease. And to do that, I think we need to be working on a completely different level. We have tried to dumb down dental hygiene for so long. Let's reduce it and let's dumb it down and make us sound like we are almost unskilled when what we should be is highly educated and highly skilled. So I have worked with my colleagues at Idaho State University, and we have created several different versions of what we think this other person, educated person, should be. And you all fit that profile of this person. Many of us fit this. We already are this person. It's just we've never really looked at ourselves this way before. But we come in thinking of ourselves as teeth scrapers, teeth cleaners, not healthcare provider. We need to reframe this concept of ourselves completely. We are healthcare providers. We're not teeth cleaners. We're not the girl in the office who's going to take a Curette and remove a dead tissue from your teeth. We are individuals who are, from the moment the person stands up and starts walking with us to our operatory, we are assessing that person and we are evaluating them from a medical perspective as well as an oral health perspective. And we are determining if it's safe to treat the patient, if the patient is healthy enough to be able to withstand treatment. And then we are providing multiple levels of care. We are not cleaning anything. We are debriding tissue. We are doing all kinds of preventive treatments for them. We are trying to bring them to a state of health. We're doing so many different things with them, and we are working interprofessionally with other healthcare providers. Does that sound like a dumbed down job to you? And so why we try to make ourselves out to be less than we are has always made me wonder, you know, who are these people who want that for us? And why do we join that crew? when we could be elevating ourselves to what we really are and representing ourselves so much better. And we could be part of the group from around the world who look at the picture of oral health and how drastic it is and say, I want to be part of the group who is preventing this oral health problem that affects the world. Look at what you do when you do your mission work and you see children and adults who have this tremendous oral health need, and you say, I can change that. I can be a part of a group that does something very different. And you see that this is not a matter of just having a toothbrush in your hand, that it is a matter of social determinants. That is more than a two-year education. It takes a lot of education to understand how you influence social determinants. That is the job of a healthcare provider. That is not the job of a Columbia 1314 or a Gracie 78, is it? I mean, do you see, do you understand?
No, I definitely hear what you're saying.
You have to educate individuals who will say, I will use my public health knowledge to make differences in social determinants, to change this picture, because children in our country do not have the wherewithal to protect themselves from oral health disease. And children and adults should not be in pain from oral health disease, should not be able to have difficulty functioning because of oral health disease. Why is it that we think our only role is to sit in an operatory in a dental office when our role is to be out in the world, out in the community, affecting change? But we are taught to limit ourselves to an operatory. And so if we are better educated and we are functioning as healthcare providers, we see the world differently, and we recognize that we belong in many, many types of settings affecting change. We can't do that when all we see is calculus removal. And we focus ourselves, and unfortunately, our current system of education, it has a very narrow focus when we need a far broader focus. So I would like to redesign our educational system. I'd like to put us on a higher level. And our current program with our entry-level doctoral program starts us in the first 2 years of teaching us those skills and then slowly introducing us to the role of clinician, so that our framework, our mindset is addressing and preventing oral disease. And then we learn our clinical role, so that we're not thinking about, oh, I just want to remove calculus. Our mindset is shifted to healthcare provider, and we learn all the roles of the dental hygienist. And then you pick what you want your focal role to be and go and move in many roles. And then we also have designed a PhD program for educators who want that academic role. And then we have the doctorate in dental hygiene for current clinicians who say, well, I want that doctoral degree because I see myself moving in many dimensions and I want to get that degree as well. So there's many options for us to move beyond where we are now. And for those hygienists who say, you know, I want to leave clinical practice, maybe the answer isn't leaving clinical practice. Maybe the answer is elevating your education so you can do more things.
I was going to say, we strongly agree with that. I have 2 points. Well, one, I don't know why this has never dawned on me, but I love the idea of, even at this, if we can't in the next, decade, elevate our degrees outside of associates or bachelors, I love the idea of a hygiene student learning how to prevent disease before you ever pick up a suction, a mirror, a scaler. Like, that's so simple. Like, it makes so much sense. Like, why would
Why would you treat the disease? Yeah. You know, I know 2 years, this is not a lot, but I love the idea that it should be based upon how do you prevent the disease? And when that hasn't been prevented, this is now how you treat the disease. And this is going to be kind of the last thing that you learn because all the other stuff is so much more important in the grand scheme. I get in trouble a lot because I jokingly say I can teach a monkey to scale. And, you know, so sometimes, yes, you have some motor skills that some people don't have that probably shouldn't be picking up a scaler, but that again doesn't make a hygienist. It's the other stuff too. And so not all hygienists maybe are in the op physically taking calculus off, and maybe they're doing all the other preventive public health things that we need. But I want to be a little bit of a devil's advocate with that understanding of going more to the doctorate level. Because I know the pushback I probably would hear and I probably would have said 10 years ago was that's going to cost a lot of money and I'm not going to make any more money as a clinician until there are some changes within the business side of dentistry or the insurance reimbursement side of dentistry. Like, so how do you see the other parts of dentistry needing to change before we can increase and elevate our education? Or do you think that needs to come first and these other things will follow?
So you want sort of the chicken and the egg, but what I really think we need to have happen is something simultaneously. And I think part of that is happening when we see direct access happening across 45 states now, or is it 44? And forgive me for not knowing the exact number, but I knew it was 44. So there may be one more now. But I think what's happening is this movement of hygienists and dental therapists having greater ability to work maybe collaboratively and somewhat independently now, and the simultaneous part is starting to get reimbursement for the care that they're providing. It isn't happening as quickly as we would like in all states, which is the downside of this, but I think there is this recognition that something has to change somewhere. Now, what I do know is that there is a study that is starting to look at, and I think it's through the American Dental Education Association, to look at how hygienists are being licensed, how they are being reciprocated for payment, how the whole process is occurring. And that, in combination with direct access and some of these other things, you may start to see this change process occurring where the stakeholders are looking at, can we do better in providing care for the underserved and the unserved? And I do think there is going to be this movement and change occurring simultaneously to address those very issues that you bring up. And when that happens, and I think that's going to happen in the next 5 years.
Oh.
I probably don't have a great crystal ball, but I think I have somewhat of a crystal ball on this one. I think this is going to be a demand coming from stakeholders and the public and us as our profession is making that demand as well. You are going to see that change. And so when we then say, let's bring in doctoral programs and there are doctorally educated hygienists who are then saying, well, I have this degree and I provide this care in this particular setting and therefore I want this set remuneration for this, you are going to see that happen. It happened with PT. It happened with, you know, other groups who made this change. I think it will happen with hygiene. The difference for us is we've never done it, so we don't know.
Earlier you mentioned international colleagues and things like that, and you do have a pretty good experience from knowing that firsthand what our international colleagues are thinking. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
So, I was really honored and privileged to work with the International Federation of Dental Hygienists. I was a delegate to that organization and then an officer and president from 2013 to 2016. So the international world is really an exciting world. And we think that, oh gosh, here in America, we have it so hard. You know, the East Coast is so conservative and the West Coast has it all, which of course it's not really that way, but it is more conservative on the East Coast. But then you go to the, you know, you go to the IFDH and you find out that, you know, hygienists in Indonesia have all the same concerns that we have here in the U.S. or, you know, hygienists in Europe, you know, some of them have flexibility and some of them don't. And you find out that the, you know, the concerns and the issues and the hopes and the dreams of hygienists are almost the same no matter where you go. They struggle to get legislative changes. They want independent practice. They want to be able to change the and improve the oral health of the people of their country. And they are mystified by their colleagues in dentistry who want to hold them back. And then there are others who want to move them forward. So you kind of have very similar issues. And you have some hygienists who really are gangbusters and want to move the needle forward for the profession. And you have other hygienists who are more tentative and a little concerned about taking risks and taking chances. So kind of the same thing, but always the devotion to improving the health of the public, no matter where I have gone. You always see that same dedication, that same love for our profession, that passion for our profession, and the same desire to take those individuals who truly need help and get the help that is needed for them. And the same frustration about why can't we do more? Why can't our education be better? Why do we have to always bat our heads against the wall fighting dentistry to let us do more? It's there no matter where we go. The difference that I see in the last few years has been with the IFDH has been a bit of a coming out of our shell, which is really nice, less insular behavior and more growing outward, more willingness to partner with other organizations to move that needle forward, which has been mind-blowing for me and really exciting, and more focus on social responsibility. And if you look on the IFDH website, you will really see a presence of social responsibility. At the upcoming meeting in 2019, there will be a focus on the social responsibility programs that they started from 2016 to 2019. So that will be showcased, which is going to be really exciting. And also, we are working very hard at creating the whole scientific program will be an elevation of research and translational research and sort of the advancement of concepts and ideas. We had feedback on the last few IFDH meetings that participants really want to hear from hygienists as speakers, but they also want to have an elevation of knowledge. So we are going to work hard at making that happen. And our call for poster sessions and abstracts is really going to have a focus on that. So I'm hoping that we want our partnerships of speakers who do exactly that. So we can have somebody who really sort of presents knowledge, but we want the partner speaker to do the translation of that knowledge to everyday practice. And we want a lot of exchange of ideas. So we're opening up time in those sessions for participants to ask a lot of questions and have Q&A instead of, you know, Andrew talking for 30 minutes and then saying, okay, thanks, bye. And everybody runs off to the next session and nobody gets a chance to ask questions. So yeah, we hope that. So you two could be a great partnership presenting a proposal for an oral session and talking about the work that you do and giving a session.
I think you would have a hard time making us tell you what we actually do.
Yeah, defining that is harder. Let's go back to the IFDH. So who's a part of it and how do you become a member?
So the IFDH is represented by two delegates from each member country, and there, I believe, are 32 member countries. And there's a board of directors. The president is Robin Watson from New Zealand, and they're on the IFDH website, which is www.ifdh.org. You can see who are the board of directors and the delegates from each of the member countries. You can be an individual member of IFDH. So it, like the U.S. is a member country, but then you each can be individual members. So you can go right on the website and become an individual member. You get the publication from the I'm just like blanking out right now, but you will get the research publication from it. You have the opportunity to have a reduced registration fee to the scientific symposium. You can get all kinds of information from the website that introduces you to award options for you. There's a research grant program that's available. So if you wanted some seed money for something, if you're doing mission work, you can get grant money.
Oh, nice.
To do your mission work. So that is a really great feature for anyone. And you don't have to be a member to get some of those grants and award monies. There's a program that I started called Every Child Has a Toothbrush, which is really special to me. But it's small seed money that allows you to go into a community, and it doesn't have to be on a mission project. It could be right here in the U.S. because we know that there are plenty of areas of poverty here in the U.S. where children do not have toothbrushes, and you can get $250 to give you supplies that if you wanted to do a sealant program and a toothbrush, you know, an education program for children. And the point of it is not just to hand out a toothbrush, but to teach children how to use a toothbrush well. And you go back, you know, a month or 2 months later, and you check on them, give them another toothbrush, and make sure they know how to use the toothbrush well. And again, it's a simple program, but it's one that can be very effective for children who don't know, don't have access to dental offices, don't have a dental home yet, but at least might have a skill to help prevent tooth decay. Mm. So it's a simple little program, but it's a great program. And there's all kinds of little programs like that. There's free continuing education available. There's a leadership program that hygienists can have access to. And again, if your country's a member, you don't even have to be an individual member, but you have access to those kinds of benefits through the IFDH. So the whole idea is to support the, you know, the development of dental hygienists around the world.
I love that so much.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, we are for sure going to go to Brisbane for the next conference. That's going to be so fun. We'll talk about maybe figuring something out if we can present, but regardless, the podcast is going. So that'll be really fun. We are running short on time. We would love though, if you had maybe a final message for the new graduates or the students, the younger hygienists,
the novice hygienist.
So for any hygienist, but especially for new students and graduates, my message would be, I think you are entering the best profession you could ever hope to enter because you have the opportunity to do something very unique. You are going to change the lives of the patients that you see. And that is something that is immeasurable. It is invaluable to what you do. You will find people who say, well, nobody ever told me that, or I didn't know that I could be better at something or could do something differently that's going to improve my health, not just my oral health, but my health. And that is very empowering for the patient, and it is empowering for you. And don't ever take for granted that you are not important, because you are going to be so important for those individuals. And look beyond the everyday and look for the opportunities for you for your future and create your future. Don't ever feel that you're stuck or that there's nothing more for you. And when you think you are stuck in a rut, call me, call Andrew, call Michelle, and talk about what are other things that you could be doing to make this a career and a lifetime of joy, because that's what it's been for me. I have never once thought, oh my God, I can't stand this, or I don't want to do this anymore. It's been my whole life of joy. I've always been learning, and I think it's the greatest thing that could ever happen. So if you approach your career that way, I think you are going to be so excited by what you do and very fulfilled. So look for your future as something great and wonderful and exciting, and it will be that.
If someone wanted to drop you an email about maybe some of the things that they heard on this episode, what's a good contact email for you?
So I'll give you my ISU email. It's GUREJOAN@ISU.edu. Feel free to do that. And I'm even going to give you my phone number. And that's 208-240-1443. You can call or email. I'm here whenever you need me.
You're the best.
Joanne, we love you so much. Thank you for taking the time this morning to do
this
with us.
Seriously.
Thank you. I love you both. This is so much fun. I'll do it again another time.
Please,
yes,
please, please.
Please. Love
all
it.
Right.
All right.
Have a safe trip home.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
all
you.
Right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
It's about that time. Grab your blanket and a glass of wine. It's story time with Michelle.
Welcome to Story Time with Michelle. In honor of our wonderful guest, Joanne, I am going to read an article, actually a part of the article that she has written with Ellen Rogo and with Anne Spilorek. I hope I said that right, Anne. I'm sorry if I did not. So this is going to be, it's coming from the Journal of Evidence-Based Dental Practice. It's titled, The Doctoral Degree in Dental Hygiene, Creating New Oral Healthcare Paradigms. And that this is from... What?
I'll just say I love that title already.
Yeah.
I'm already excited about what's going on.
Oh, finally you're excited about a story time?
I am. Well, it's Joanne's.
I was
going to
say, it's definitely the author, and you're not excited about the fact that I'm about to read you research.
No.
Okay. So the introduction. I can already see this is going to be a rough one. Traditionally, colleges and university requirements required a doctoral degree of faculty seeking tenured positions. Faculty within departments of dental hygiene have been held to the same standards for promotion and tenure as those within our other divisions. These standards have included obtaining a terminal degree with respective discipline, doctoral education, research, and scholarship, teaching effectiveness, leadership, and service to the university, profession, and community. For the co-authors of this article, obtaining a doctoral degree in dental hygiene was not an option, as one did not exist at the time that we were considering higher education. We needed to pursue doctoral degrees in their disciplines. It was in other disciplines. It was clear that if a terminal degree in dental hygiene at the doctoral level was to be achieved, it would have to be created. Doctoral education in dental hygiene has been discussed since 2005 when the American Dental Hygienist Association published Dental Hygiene, Focus on Advancing the Profession, a document that included a goal to create a doctoral degree program in dental hygiene within 20 years. Specific recommendations were to, one, develop curricular models for both professionals and academic doctoral degrees in dental hygiene, two, to conduct educator workshops at professional meetings to promote the development of a doctoral program in dental hygiene, and three, publish curricular models for dental hygiene professional journals. Curriculum models for doctoral education have been proposed, and workshops related to doctoral dental hygiene education were offered at the 2012 American Dental Education Association annual session, establishing interest in the creation of doctoral programs. The international community of dental hygienists supports advanced education as desirable, and recent research among graduate dental hygiene students demonstrates that doctoral dental hygiene education is needed and important to the dental hygiene discipline. Of the 159 graduate learners responding to the recent survey on doctoral dental hygiene conducted by Tamath and Walsh, 43% expressed interest in enrolling in a doctoral program in the next 1 to 5 years. More respondents were interested in enrolling in a Doctor of Dental Hygiene practice degree, that was 62%, than a PhD program at 38%. Reasons for pursuing a doctoral degree were to become a better educator, expand clinical practice opportunities, become a better researcher, and increasing earning potential. Discussions about doctoral education in dental hygiene have centered on the need to create a cadre of dental hygiene researchers and scholars who will expand the body of knowledge for the profession. It has been proposed that scholars are needed to lead the development of theory and disseminate knowledge unique to the discipline of dental hygiene. The benefit of doctoral education is the time and focus provided to gain a higher level of research and grant writing skills. Ortega and Walsh support the need for doctoral prepare dental hygienists to teach graduate-level dental hygiene learners and to engage in administrative roles in health care organizations. The transformation to doctoral education is not new to healthcare disciplines. Physical therapists, occupational therapists, and physician's assistants have raised the degree for entry level to a graduate degree in response to improving access to care and safe and effective care. Nursing and audiology have developed doctoral education to prepare students for discipline-specific research, education, and practice. Specifically, the nursing profession created the Doctor of Nursing Practice degree to prepare experts in specialized advanced nursing practice, using evidence-based practice in response to the need to improve healthcare delivery. The 2011 Institute of Medicine report, Advancing Oral Health in America, provided recommendations through the new Oral Health Initiative to the Department of Health and Human Services for the improvement of oral health in the United States. One of the recommendations was to explore new models for care delivery. In response to this challenge, dental hygiene must expand on existing educational models to better align with the advanced educational objectives, including training and leadership, as has already been developed by other health professions. The dental education community is tasked to develop leaders as a component of educating future oral health professionals. Dental hygienists need to be prepared with leadership skills, enabling them to participate and lead interprofessional teams and develop policies that will change the delivery of oral health care services to improve popular health. Current educational models do not adequately prepare dental hygienists to serve in this leadership capacity. Two models of doctoral education for dental hygiene are presented to illustrate the preparation of dental hygienists as scholars and leaders for the profession. And so they highlight these two models. I would highly suggest getting this article. It was really great. You know, one other thing that I learned at RDH Evolution is how awesome Emily Bogie is on the education side of things.
Yeah, she's incredible.
So we need more Emily's, more Joanne's, more Ann's out there, because we really do need to elevate our careers and our profession.
I agree.
Yep. I didn't wear my night guard this weekend because I forgot it, and I can definitely feel it in my speech. My jaw is so, I couldn't form any of my words.
Sure, that's what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to blame it on that. But anyhow, so anything else?
No.
All right. Well,
I'm good.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Find us on Facebook. We now have an Instagram and a Twitter account, y'all. Like, go find it, especially the Instagram account. It is A Tale of Two Hygienists. That is our Instagram and Twitter accounts. You can also share that whenever you can. That would be wonderful and amazing. Don't forget to tell your friends. Like, I kept hearing people say, like, oh, yeah, I did hear that. And the person next to them were like, oh my gosh, you got to listen to them. That should be done in real life. Like, go and tell your friends. Tell your friends. Tell your colleagues. Tell students. We really, really want to engage the students. So if you are an educator, tell your students about this. And you can send us an email at atalotwohygienist@gmail.com. And you can also go to our new website, atalotwohygienist.com. Anything else you can think of? Did I forget?
I think you've hit it pretty good, but there's going to be lots of really cool new things happening over the next several months. So stay tuned for all that.
Yep. Yep. And we hope you have a great week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
So that was fantastic.
Thanks.
By the way, just love it. I really wish we had more time. Michelle's got a scoot. She's got eating and then working and all that stuff. And then, yeah, I don't know where my brother ended up being. So he might be dead on the side of Michigan Avenue for all I know. Okay.
Joanne Gurinlian. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to talk about legacies in this? What?
We're asking if that's right because you weren't sure who was going to be on the podcast. Yes. Or how to pronounce her name.
Because I wasn't sure if I was giving the right interview.
Okay. I know it was, I mean, yeah, we've been, yeah. We moved the schedule around a little bit on you.
Exactly. So I was just making sure, because I did look at it. Like, I did the responsible thing and looked at it. And I was like, wait, did I look at the right date, though? I wasn't getting any confirmation from you on that. So I felt a little insecure.
I like to give you the blank stare.
Well, that's
just so you have, like, pretty typical. What's going on?
That's pretty typical. Yeah.
A lot.
That's my room service.
Here, I'll talk. Room service. Get your thing in your ear. Well, because we're trying to figure out like a place to record. And like, okay, there's some places that are quiet. There's this and that. But like, she is starving. She's always starving, it feels like. Oh, sorry. What?
Nothing. Did you say?
How great you are. Mm-hmm.